There you go. There's BJ and Larry. Welcome, guys. And Rebecca, good morning. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Jerry.
Thank you, Margo.
Good morning, man.
A couple more minutes. Hey, good morning, guys. Everybody grabbing their last cup of coffee and running to their computer. Matt. Almost ready. Hey John, good morning. You're just getting ready for a la for some last minute holdouts. I presume all of you have reset your clocks last night, or you wouldn't be here. Oh, you'd be here an hour early. Oh, good morning, Elizabeth. Okay, we're just about getting ready, so we're on record. We're recording, but the button has been pushed. Thank you. I'm going to ask you all just to take a moment with us, whether you're here in person or electronically, it doesn't matter. What matters is our openness. What they call it in 12-step programs, being teachable. So that I'm not holding on to what I think I'm supposed to learn this morning. I'm open to whatever is going to come to me. And each one of us is probably going to experience this differently. By being open, each one of us, by being open, we create an energetic field that allows us to be open more than we could if we were just by ourselves. It's a little bit mysterious, but it's true. That's what Jesus meant when he said, "Wherever two or more are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them." So, whatever you need to do to become more open, to become more receptive, just allow yourself to do that. or come to that place, or open your heart, open your mind, open your spirit. Let go of expectations. Allow yourself to be grateful for this moment that we share with one another. And some of this stuff we will not understand with our thinking mind, but we don't have to. If someone tells you that they love you, you don't have to figure out what that means. You just allow yourself to be open to that truth, to be receptive of that truth. In fact, you even begin to notice that if you try to figure it out, you kind of block the experience. So we ask our souls, our spiritual nature, our divine consciousness to be open to the truth of who we are, what we are, and to allow ourselves to be open to whatever learning, whatever lessons that need to come to us this morning. No force is necessary. No pushing, no pulling. It's all right here in front of us. So I'm going to begin on page 320. For those of you who might be new, the format of this class, of this learning, this teaching, is that I'll read a little bit from the book, and then we open ourselves up for comments or suggestions or whatever else it might be, and you might have a difficult time shutting me up. Good morning. We got a crowd here this morning. Page 320. Again, allow yourself to be as receptive as you can be. Letting go of expectations. Letting go of trying to figure things out. The field that you hold now, the energy that you hold now, the openness that you have now, the field that you have now, each and every one of you, is so receptive to the requirements of your growth that you cannot stop receiving what you need to grow through. In other words, just by showing up, it's inevitable. It's kind of, you're walking through the door, you buy your ticket. It doesn't cost a thing, but you buy it anyway. And your ticket is receptiveness, openness. At the level we teach you at, and as we said, there is more to come, holds you not only accountable to your own choices, to all you see before you, but also to what may come as you agree to it. Course in Miracles suggests I could see this differently, no matter what it is, whether it's an election, whether it's a spilled cup of coffee, whether it's what you're having for dinner, or maybe what you forgot to make for dinner. It all winds up in the same place because you are accountable to your own choices, how I choose to react, how I choose to respond to whatever it is. Now, I'll tell you something about me. I still have quite a few knee-jerk reactions to people, places, and things. So, in other words, something happens or somebody says something, bam, I'm there. I spent a long time trying to get rid of all of my knee-jerk reactions that I pretty much learned as a kid growing up, and they stayed with me. I could say I'm still working on them, which I am. I also found out that all of the work that I did on my knee-jerk reactions was not terribly productive. Because sometimes the more I tried to get rid of them, the more they were there. What I did discover was that instead of trying to get rid of my knee-jerk, my automatic responses to some people, places, and things, was as soon as I realized my knee-jerk was put in place, was activated, might be a good word to use for that, is that's when I had a choice. Do I either follow up where the knee-jerk is taking me, or do I choose to see or look at something different? That's what I decided my work comes in. So it's not trying to eradicate. I would be good to eradicate the knee-jerk, since I'm sure some of them are gone, but most of them are still there. So my part of my spiritual practice is not getting rid of the knee-jerk so much, but making a choice after they happen. Do I have to follow up on this, or can I choose something differently? Can I choose to see this differently? Can I choose to act upon this differently? And it's really kind of an interesting thing to notice what happens then. One of my favorite stories about that is when Margot and I were up in Wisconsin visiting our granddaughter, who was our only grandchild at that particular time. And she was in the back seat of our car. We were driving someplace downtown in Appleton, Wisconsin. She was in the kid's seat. And I have a really difficult time driving around places that I'm not familiar with. First of all, I think I should know my way around, even though I've never seen it before. Secondly, I'm really uptight because I know I shouldn't get lost, but I probably go into, so I have absolutely no sense of direction. So here I am, kind of wound up like a top. And somebody did something, cut me off, came too close, was going too slow, whatever it happens to be. And I was all set to let out a litany of disturbed words. That was my knee-jerk reaction. Something happened between the knee-jerk and my activity, because as soon as the knee-jerk got kicked into place and I was ready to go, the thought came into my mind, do I want my granddaughter to see me that way? It's right there. And at that particular moment, I realized I had a choice. I didn't have to respond to that in the old way, which I didn't. Now, sometimes I forget I have a choice when the knee-jerk takes me over too quickly, but I'll never forget that particular event. Do I really want to see, really well, let my granddaughter see me this way? And of course, the answer was no. And I, at that moment, I discovered I had a choice about how I responded.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I like a lot of people, probably a lot of people in this room, had automatic reactions seeing various political signs.
Oh, of course.
And it's interesting, I live out in the rural area, so the political signs I see are very different than the ones I see around here. So I get a lot of opportunity to work on it. Exactly. And what I have discovered is to, rather than have an automatic reaction that I hope it's not consistent with who I wanted, I have substituted. And every time now I see that, I think, okay, what is it in my life that I have time right now to think about that I have real influence? Real influence. How much of my time am I spending on things that I don't have real influence on? And what is that? If I were to take that time where I really don't have very much interest, spend that time on things that I really have influence, how much better would my life be if it goes to the life around me?
Yeah. It reminds me very much of that little serenity prayer. Except, you know, difference between changing the things I can, changing the things I can't, and the courage to change the things that I can't change. So raising that level of awareness. So I think that I appreciate that. Thank you, Matt. If we practice raising our awareness or raising our vibration, or raising the vibration of what we see, that will continue to work for us. So let's say it's could be politics, could be anything really. Does it raise, how did I used to put it to myself? Simply put, and I think this fits with what Matt was saying, is what I am thinking or what I am planning to say or the action I am planning to take, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? And I have a choice of which one of those levels of vibration that I take in. Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? I didn't invent that. That came to me one day in a meditation, and I'm forever thankful for that because that did not come from my human consciousness. It's too simple and it's too good, all right? Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? And I will forget that, but I will remember it again and again and again and again. Does this open my heart? The thought that I have, the action that I'm planning on taking, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? Each human being who is born comes with a claim, comes with a knowing that is inborn within them of what they need to learn, what the primary lessons are for the lives they live. In other words, before we incarnated this time around, we created an agenda, a blueprint for what I am supposed to do or what I am supposed to, what I'm choosing to do, what I'm choosing to accomplish this particular lifetime around. So whatever happens before we became incarnated, whether you're sitting down with your guardian angels or your spirit guides or those people who have helped you in other lifetimes, no matter what we kind of create a blueprint. And when we're becoming incarnated, we sort of grab this blueprint before we become take physical form, and we bring it into physical form with us. And then, of course, we forget that we set that up. But there are usually moments in our lives, especially ones when we are dedicated to our own spiritual growth, that it becomes pretty obvious, pretty aware that this is a lesson that I've chosen to learn in my life. So, for instance, let's take addictions and attachments, which is always a good one to take. I could look at that as something that's a struggle in my life, where there's something wrong with me. Or I can also begin to look at it as saying, I took this on this particular lifetime in order to be able to heal, in order to be able to grow, and in order to be able to be able to touch other people at the same time. Maybe part of my learning is going to be part of somebody else's learning. I wasn't going to get into this, but I'm going to say it anyway. My first sponsor in 12-step recovery was a man named Harold Boone. He's made his transition so I can use his last name. Harold would drive me to meetings practically every evening, or at least probably about 6 months. I wasn't driving at the time. And I remember after I had been sober for clean and sober for about a couple of months, he said to me, you know, he said, I got a phone call from the central office of AA giving me your phone number, asking me to call you. You must have called them up and told them you needed somebody to give you a ride. I said, yes, I did. He said, you know what's really interesting about that? He said, I was just getting ready to decide to stop going to meetings. I said, here I am taking you every night of the week to a meeting. So here's my stuff, my addiction, and I'm just beginning to see some daylight in between the darkness, okay? And here's my addiction, my attachment to alcohol and drugs, and doing something about that that changes somebody else's life without me even knowing. So I wonder how many people in your life you've lovingly affected. Maybe just by walking by them in Kroger's and giving them a smile. You don't know. But there probably are some obvious ones in your life that you know have changed you. And if they've changed you, you know they've changed other people as well. Just by creating that energy field of loving, of caring, of sacrifice, of whatever it might happen to be at that particular moment. So that might be something we can learn from today's experience. Asking ourselves every once in a while, can I be open? Not to understanding people that I might have changed in my life, but can I be open to the truth that some people that I meet today, I might be the only light they see? I might be the only light they see. I often wonder sometimes when I've been in a dark place, a depression. I'm still prone to depressions every once in a while, as healthy as I am. Still there. But I often wonder sometimes when I'm in a dark place and find myself moving out of that dark place, which doesn't happen just by willpower. It happens in some kind of mysterious way. I often wonder who's praying for me at that moment. And maybe there's a little monk 5,000 miles away who is praying for somebody in the United States who's battling depression. And that somehow or another, that energy comes through and touches me in a way that I don't even understand. Who might be touching me at this moment? Maybe somebody I don't even know, maybe somebody who doesn't even know me. And yet the energy field is there and the transformational energy is there and it happens. I know it happened. It had nothing to do with my choice. Had nothing to do with my small self, had nothing to do with my ego, my personality, right? It had to do somehow or another with higher consciousness that I could not reach at that particular moment, but somehow somebody else gave me a boost, gave me the ability to reach something I could not reach myself. Each human being who is born comes with a claim. Comes with a knowing that is inborn within them of what they need to learn, what the primary lessons are for the lives they live. So if it shows up in your life, it's something you've asked for to learn from. That's a whole different perspective of compared to why did this have to happen to me? We have a choice. Same event, different way of looking at it. And certainly make it makes a difference about how it touches me or what I do with it. What we would like you to know now is that the decoding of this for you will be done by you in your expression. Those of you who say, I don't know what I am here for, will begin to reassume the self in a new purpose. And the purpose we teach you will always be for the highest good of all. What am I doing here? To raise the level of vibration for myself and everyone on planet Earth, or every other dimension that might be touching. That's what I'm here for. The way one of my teachers put it is the planet Earth is the classroom of unconditional love. And the end point, if you want to put it that way, is to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. And she adds, that will probably take more than one lifetime. which it probably will. But once you reach that point of holding everyone and everything in unconditional love, you graduate to the next level, whatever that is. But the mind wants, well, mind wants to know what's the next level. Well, you're not going to know that until you hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. Then you find out what it is. Because the mind could not possibly conceive what that would look like. In fact, the mind would have a difficult time to even conceiving what would it be like to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. Even the possibility of that. Well, maybe about 90% of the population, but not them over there. Thing about it is, if you leave anyone out of the picture, it doesn't work. It's not unconditional love anymore. The Buddhas have a sect in Buddhism called the Mahayana, which is sometimes translated as the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind it is the boat doesn't leave until everyone's on it. In other words, there's no such thing as individual enlightenment. Either we all get it or nobody gets it. The Course in Miracles has an image somewhat similar to that. And I don't recall exactly where it shows up in the book. But it's the image of Jesus, the Christ consciousness, standing at an open door. And the door opens into oneness with the Father, into nirvana, whatever you want to call it, oneness with all being. And the Christ consciousness says, I am holding this door open until everybody gets through. Now, I could do that automatically because I already am one with the Father, but I'm holding the door open until everybody gets, and when everybody gets through, then I'll follow you there. The boat doesn't leave until anybody's on. Or as a line from a song goes, you can't hold your brother in the dark and expect to see the light. Can't happen. So think about those you're holding in the dark right now. People I could not possibly love. People I could not possibly see the divine in. And my prayer so often is, Lord, that I may see. Let me see myself, because that's where it begins. Can you see yourself as God sees you? Do you see yourself as being an expression of unconditional love? Help me to see myself as you see me. Help me to see others how you see them. See me, feel me, touch me, heal me. Those of you who say, I don't know what I'm here for, will begin to reassume the self in a new purpose. And the purpose we teach you will always be for the highest good of all, the highest vibration of all beings. Not just one, not just two, not just five, not just a million, but everyone. The true self you see, your authentic self, your divine consciousness, has to be in service to know herself fully. And the dictates of the selfish self, my way or the highway, will have to be placed aside because it will be an obstacle on the path before you. The true self has to be in service to know herself fully. An interesting sentence. Seems to be out of place there. Seems where'd they get that? How'd they get in there? The true self, you see, has to be in service to know herself fully. Abraham Maslow, the psychologist, created something called the hierarchy of needs, which said essentially, you know, if you can't jump to the top of the ladder. If you're hungry, if you're starving, all right, spiritual enlightenment doesn't mean a whole lot. You got to get fed first. And he said, at one point in his work, he said, the highest reality that we can reach is what I am calling peak experience. Peak experience is a sense of oneness with all beings. And we've all experienced that in one way. And sometimes just a little flash every once in a while. And then, of course, I try to grab a hold of it. It's like smoke. I can't quite hold on to it. But it's there. And those are kind of reminders of the truth of who you are. But he got together with a couple of other people. He formed some school called Humanistic Psychology. And then he got together with a couple of other people and formed another school of philosophy or psychology called transpersonal psychology, which went beyond the thinking mind, went beyond the imagination, and really talked to your soul. And so instead of saying peak experience is the highest you can go, he said the highest thing, the highest level you can go to is service. The highest level you can go to is service, is holding another human being in unconditional love. So I think that's what they're getting at here. And I don't know that for sure. That's my interpretation. The true self, you see, has to be in service to know herself fully, has to be completely engaged in service to another. And that doesn't have to be doing something for somebody. Another psychologist, Carl Rogers, said the moment of therapeutic healing happens when I am fully present with the person I'm working with. I'm not thinking about what the next question is. I'm not thinking about what we're going to be doing next session. I'm not thinking about this person hasn't paid their bill yet, right? What I am doing is I am perfectly present to you. And when I am perfectly present to you, healing takes place. That is the moment of therapeutic healing. It cannot be forced, cannot happen without by pushing it or pushing against. It just happens to be. And you probably know this already. The teachers that you had in your life that you remember. You don't remember necessarily what they taught you, or even what subject they might have taught you. What you do remember more than anything else is how that somehow or another, in some mystical sort of way, that they allowed themselves to be totally present to you. I see you. Jack Poole's favorite quote from Avatar. I see you. I know who you are. I see you.
Sure.
Yeah, John.
Came across a quote last night that just really moved me. I think it pertains to what you're saying. And the quote is, you meet someone like Donald Trump or someone you disagree with, you say to yourself, you are part of me that I haven't met yet.
That's beautiful, John. Thank you. Somebody I'm having difficulty with. You are a part of me that I haven't met yet. And you're certainly a part of me that I haven't loved yet. But I'm working on. See, my little self, my small self, you have to be deserving of love. And of course, that's just putting conditions on something that doesn't need any conditions. That's a part of me that I haven't loved yet. Wow. Thank you, John. Changes the whole perspective, doesn't it? You can't leave anybody off the boat. The boat doesn't leave until everybody's on. And you can't choose who you're sitting next to on the boat. Because if you start doing that, you're pushing people away or embracing others and pushing others away. You know, guess who's sitting next to you on the boat? Maybe the person you have the most problems with. And the boat doesn't leave until you're both sitting there in the same place. The true self, you see, has to be in service to know herself fully. The dictates of the selfish self, the small self, the ego consciousness, my way or the highway, will have to be placed aside because it will be an obstacle on the path before you. It will be a piece of baggage. It will be wonderful. The Latin word for baggage is impedimenta. An impediment, something that gets in my way. And my baggage always gets in my way. My baggage is all of the stuff I don't like about you. All of the stuff that I haven't loved yet or discovered. As we teach you, we remember you each as the one with the right to know. And the right to know means that what you have left in shadow, it's just what we were talking about. The right to know means what you have left in shadow will be brought forward to be seen as required for your journey up the mountain to continue. One of my teachers, Jacqueline Small, used to say, you know, when you pray to be in the light, your small self, your ego consciousness expects that all of a sudden the light's going to come around and going to enfold you in unconditional love and all sorts of warm and fuzzy kind of thing. So that might happen sometimes. But most of the time, when you pray to be in the light, what happens is all the stuff that's keeping you in the dark comes right up in your face. To be healed, to be blessed, to know, to love, to embrace. It all comes up. You want to be in the light? We got to take care of all the stuff that's keeping you in the dark. That just happens to be a truth of growth. That's where that silly little statement, be careful what you pray for, came from. It's rather, you know, if you're limiting your consciousness, that's true. But if you're open to what your growth and your loving experience happens to be, is when you pray to be in the light, you know what's coming next. My shadow is going to open up, and what I need to heal, what I need to work on, what I need to transform will be right there for me. What you have left in shadow will be brought forward to be seen as required for your journey up the mountain to continue. Now, Paul jumps in. I like Paul. Paul asks the questions nobody else wants to ask. He's not afraid of what the guys are going to think about him. So here I am asking for guidance. And I better do this right or they're not going to think good about me. Paul is asking, are we going up the mountain anymore? Are we going to have a talk about where we go? In other words, what the hell's happening? You lost me here for a minute. Both things are happening at once. As we teach you, the escalation of your field progresses incrementally. As you walk up the path with us, you lift to higher fields. We do not pause in our awakening of your fields, your energy. In fact, as you turn each page, as you hear or experience these words, you are being attuned, and the field that you hold is creating the patterning for you for what is required for you to progress through. Simply put, whatever you need to grow with is being supplied to you. So not just does your shadow open up and come up in your face, but all of the tools you need in order to be able to heal, to grow, to transform, to release, all the tools you need are also being present to you right now. So for instance, if you want to get fixated on 12 steps, but let's suppose you decide to go and you have a relative or a friend who's an alcoholic who's not in recovery, and you want to do something to help them, but you also realize that a lot of your stuff is getting triggered. So you decide to go to Al-Anon. And what happens there is a whole bunch of people will begin to help you raise your vibration of thought of how you not only see this other individual, but how you see yourself. And once that happens, you can be a lot more compassionate and a lot more open to the people around you. And that's happening all the time, if and when we are willing. I am willing to grow, to change, to shift, to become. What we ask of you as we continue this teaching, this is beautiful. What we ask of you as we continue this teaching is the forgiveness of the self for not knowing. I could have had a V8. Right. But I didn't realize I could add a V8. Forgiveness of the self for not knowing what comes next. Because you're not going to know with your intellect. So much of what life is about is being learning how to be more open and comfortable to change. How you handle change, how you handle the unexpected, how you handle the unpredictable will be probably an extremely significant, if not totally significant, piece of your life and your learning and your growth. It's going to be part of the process of aging. It's going to be part of the process of dying. It's going to be part of the process of living life one moment, one day at a time. What we ask of you as we continue this teaching is the forgiveness of the self. Being gentle with yourself. I had a therapist who was working with me years ago, and she did a lot of different levels of healing. And one of the first things she would do is she would stand up, ask me to stand up, and we would look at one another, eyeball to eyeball. She was about as short as I was, so we would look at one another, eyeball to eyeball. And she would grab a hold of my hands were on my side. And she would say to my body, give me a yes answer, give me a no answer. So my hands would move to yes, move up for yes, back would no. Didn't have to think about it, it just happened. And then she would ask the question about the therapy session that we were going to be doing together. She said, can we do this work gently? Can we do this work gently? And if the answer was no, we had to find another way around that. But I'll never forget that. Can we do this work gently? Because I've certainly done some work that wasn't terribly gentle. Can we do this gently? And this is important to understand, because you have such a desire to know what happens next, to skip to the last page of the book, if you wish. You preclude the self from the miracle of what would be brought to you in your innocence. And your innocence means unpresupposed, unexpected, open to the next moment, because I have no idea what the next moment's going to bring, neither do you.
Jerry?
Yes.
Who should, someone in your group there wanted to talk, so.
Oh, okay. Did I miss somebody?
Jerry, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I got you, John.
Thank you. John, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Wow, this is really hitting me this morning. It resonates with my experience over the last few months. As you know, I was a part of 400 people who were in a headcount reduction program. And so what happens next? Well, in my, I don't want to call it arrogance, but it was, there was some pride involved in it. I've been trained by some of the most incredible people in the field of performance improvement. And I know that I can do that kind of work. But I also was burned out at the company that I was at. So now I've gone through this process of being certified in additional, going through other teaching, basically, going through other teaching programs. I've now earned three certifications. I'm working on a fourth. And what I discovered as part of this was that in many cases, for me, it was my way or the highway. I really wasn't partnering with the people that I was working with. One of my certifications is in coaching, and I also have another one that I'm working on in coaching. So this past week, I applied for multiple jobs. I apply for multiple jobs every week. Frequently, on LinkedIn or other platforms, you can see how many others have applied for the job. This week, I was running into situations where 6 to 800 people had applied for the jobs. I'm in competition with 6 to 800 people for each job. Okay, so what do you do? Well, for me, it was pray and trust and let go. In the last week, I've been contacted by three different companies who had seen my profile on LinkedIn who are interested in my working with them as a coach. Wow. That's what I would prefer to do, if possible, if I can make a good living doing it. I would love to do that, but I've learned a whole different way of coaching that I didn't before. I had a very directive approach, and now I have a much more collaborative approach. I've got the tools to help me to do that. To me, this is these two pages are talking to me. This is exactly what I've been going through. Thanks.
Thank you, John. We're about running out of time this morning. We're going to do a short meditation at the end of this in a moment, and I will make a longer meditation that we'll send along to you with the video link and the reflection. Okay. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. Close your eyes, take a couple breaths. What would it be like to realize you are unconditionally loved in this moment? And that you could not be loved more than you are loved in this moment. Of course, the next moment your capacity increases, but right now in this moment, in this time, to be unconditionally loved. To breathe it into your being. To let it touch every cell and fiber of who you are, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And what would it be like to choose one other human being in your life and to allow them to experience that same level of being loved? And notice what happens when you allow another human being to be part of that scene, part of that vibration. Because you can't hold it in anymore. You want to be able to share that with another and another and another. Until everyone's on the boat. Deep breath. Absorb that into your being. And let us be grateful for one another's presence that enhances our being. That raises our vibration. That expands our level of consciousness. Stretch a bit. Know that you can take this with you. Open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all.
Thank you, Jerry.
Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
This is Barbara. Do you have 30 seconds to talk?
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to ask if you could send long distance Reiki to my AA sponsor. She's been sober about 40 years. Her husband died on Wednesday.
What's her name?
Linda Rivers. She's in Oregon.
Okay. We'll certainly do that, Barb. Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I told her I'd get some Reiki masters and
okay, you got it.